It is the story of this couple and him getting diagnosed and getting officially diagnosed and starting to reframe his life, both of them. And then it's one thing to say someone's unreliable. What do you do about that? If you say someone's got problems with executive function in certain areas, okay, that we can work with, that I can deal with. Someone has trouble listening, great. We're not going to sports bars when we want to have a conversation with my kids.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Jenny Friedman. I'm an ADHD coach and the host of the show. Yeah, we need a lot more people talking about ADHD because it's invisible. If you had a pair of glasses that can make you see the invisible, what would ADHD look like? If you're wondering right now where your glasses are, you're probably in the right place. This show has a mission. Demystify and destigmatize ADHD once and for all. Stuff isn't rocket science, people. So I am super excited about the show today, guys, because we have my dear friend and fellow ADHD coach, Agnes Green, co-hosting with me today. Hey, Agnes.
Hey, Jenny. It's great to be here, especially with our guest.
I know. And so that's the good news. We have a guest who's very exciting to have, Rick Green. He's a comedian and a writer and an ADHD coach, co-creator of the PBS documentary ADD and Loving It. He's also the owner of TotallyADD.com and husband of Ava Green. You may know him better that way. Or he's also the new inductee. He's also the new inductee of the Order of Ontario, which is super prestigious.
It is.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm not really an ADHD coach. I've just done a lot of videos about coaching. And because we have so many great videos on every aspect of ADHD, on our website, we eventually even did one on coaching, the value of coaching. And that's been really powerful. Every coach who's seen it has gone, okay, I got to give this to my clients so they get it. This will sell them on the potential of having an ADHD coach. So,
right. Oh, that's awesome. And that's something that I'm going to put in the show notes so that everybody knows now. You can go to the show notes to find the link to TotallyADD.com. There are numerous videos that you can access immediately, right?
Yeah. So there's probably, I don't know, 50 to 60 or more free videos. They're all short. They feature top experts that we've interviewed over the last 7 years. And then in the shop, we have videos that are incredibly well priced. Because, you know, not to put down coaching or doctors or therapists or whatever, but the videos are powerful because once you've seen them, you walk into your doctor's office or you come to your coaching call or you go to your support group really informed, and it saves time and money. And the other thing that I think is so powerful about video is there's so many people who have ADHD, who have learning disorders, or, you know, like me, can read the same page 7 times. And though I own many books on ADHD, there's one or two I've ever read cover to cover. Even the book I co-wrote, ADD Stole My Car Keys, was written over, and written kind of helter-skelter. It's funny because it's 155 pages and it's 155 different signs of ADHD, traits, behaviors, misbehaviors.
Oh, wow.
And strengths. And so each page is just one. So it's the perfect... Some people say, well, it's a perfect bathroom book. I say, it's a perfect ADHD book.
Right.
It's that kind of attention span. You just want to open somewhere, get something, and close it up again.
And close it up. Well, that's also why I do the podcast, because I do have a blog where I write articles, and people tell me they really enjoy just hearing the information because they get really stuck when they're trying to read it, and they zone out somewhere else and never get back to it. So,
I have things about ADHD that I read them again maybe 6 months later and say, oh, I didn't know that, because I forgot what the first time I read it. And that happens when you're trying to jam a whole bunch of information in a short amount of time, which is what I did after I got diagnosed.
Oh, I know that feeling. You're voracious to find out more, because it's everything shifting for you at that moment.
Yes.
And in a relationship, everybody around you is shifting, and all, not just in romantic relationship, but every relationship around you shifts. And there's a phenomenon. We talk about this in a couple of the different videos, but there is a phenomenon called family phenomena. There's a thing.
Phenomena.
Yeah, there's a thing that happens.
Make it up. I make up words when I don't know what to say.
Exactly. So does Shakespeare. But there's a thing called family homeostasis. And that is the example that I loved was somebody said, well, when you go to your parents' house for dinner, you probably sit in the same chair you sat in as a child, even though you're no longer a child. Mm-hmm. And that sits there, and that's my. And so on a very basic level, we like structure. We don't like things to change. We say we like novelty, but we don't want real change. So as you start to change, everything's going to shift. Mm-hmm. And I think we actually did, we have a really great video called Now You Tell Me. And it's about that emotional tornado of getting the diagnosis, the relief, which a lot of people, I think everybody experiences relief. And I actually did another video, a free one called The Terror of the ADHD Diagnosis. And you hear probably 12 or 14 adults, each one after another going, what a relief. I was so glad. I wish I'd known sooner. If only I'd known sooner. What a relief. Right. Yeah.
I'm one of the few that was not relieved.
Well, that's the tornado. So I was relieved and teary-eyed. And then I was angry at nobody. And then I was mad at myself for not thinking that this could have been there sooner. You go through that tornado. It comes up, and being ADHD, it comes up very quickly and it's gone very quickly because it's hard to remember what you were feeling. And you just instantly, I instantly have another perspective. And on the other hand, I could do that forever. So
That's
a challenge. And it's tough on the relationship, any relationship, because people see you a certain way. You're probably the black sheep of the family, especially in your own mind. And that's a big challenge. If you're in a relationship, you're in a rut. And ruts can be good. So, you know, there's kind of rhythms and comfort zones, but there can also be stuck in roles. So that, you hear this again and again, why do I have to be the responsible one just because he has ADHD or, you know, I'm tired of her flakiness. And then there's also the temptation, and I've heard a lot of people admit this, that, hey, it gives me a free ride for a little while until somebody points out that they read, apparently ADHD is not an excuse for everything. It's an explanation and you're supposed to do something about it. And then darn, busted.
Yeah.
So
think that's human nature too. I mean, everybody has that.
We don't even know we're doing it sometimes. My mother used to always, when my older sisters were doing the dishes and all the kitchen work, my mother used to say, Agnes, come in here and dust. Well, I didn't think anything of it, but I heard about it when my sisters got older. All you had to do was dust. Because I probably took me 4 hours to do the dishes.
Yeah, and I would end up dropping a few and so on. So
yeah, exactly.
It's really tough shifting the relationship. And I think it's so hard for anyone who doesn't have this to get it exactly. And Jenny, you probably do get it just because you're dealing with people relentlessly and you're seeing the range of experience.
And my family, you know, my family offered one perspective that was a little insider perspective.
Okay.
But then also, yes, I've learned tremendously through the people I work with.
Absolutely.
You know, and the reason she learned so much is because she loves her sister, which I adopted her for that reason.
Yes, I do.
You don't get a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we weren't close. We weren't really close growing up. And she was my little sister. So like so many bigger sisters, I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah. You're embarrassing me in front of my friends.
Go away already. And then some of the behaviors would be just she was very talkative. I mean, and just like, I talk a lot, but she, and it was like, oh, stop talking. And when our parents passed away, it was like, what am I going to do? You know, I don't want to not have her in my life. And it was at that same time that I saw, I was looking at coaching, but I saw ADD Coach Academy, like, and went, and she'd just been diagnosed. It's like a whole sort of thing came together in a really great way that opened me up to be able to learn. And I think that's my biggest thing for people in relationships with people with ADHD. If you don't have it, you have to be open to learn that the way you think of the world is not the way everybody thinks of the world.
in some of the videos, and one of the videos, and it might be, it's ADD and Loving It, the very first one we did that's run on PBS, and it's again and again, I think there's 20 reviews on our website, and every one of them, I think, is 5 stars out of 5. It's the most amazing video. But in that, Patrick, near the end, we talk about medication very briefly, and I ask him, I'm off camera, but I ask him and his wife, I say, how do you feel about medication? And he said, well, now that I've heard from everybody, the experts who actually know what they're talking about, I'm curious. He said, you know, I bought into all the other stuff and everything I knew was told to me by people who didn't know either and had bought into the myths that continue to swirl. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm looking forward to feeling that calm that everybody else experiences because I've never known that. And I nodded and I went, oh, yeah. And my wife, who's not ADHD, was in the room, she's the co-producer of the film. And she said that was like a lightning bolt for her. It was like, I've never known calm. That just resonated for her because she, you know, has done yoga for years and grew up on a farm, lived a very, lovely, quiet existence, It was fairly, there were some stuff going on, but it wasn't the same as being raised in downtown New York.
Right.
And so she knows calm. She can experience, she's experienced that. And so for her to get that there could be people 40 years of age, 50 years of age, 60 years of age, who have never experienced that, except maybe that first 10 seconds they held their child or when they walk out and suddenly realize there's this beautiful sunset. And for 3 seconds, the brain shuts off. It just, and then, oh, I should call somebody. That's a great sunset. I wonder where the camera is. And we all experience that, but.
That was her big aha moment.
Yeah. And that is the thing, you know, you're talking about education, crucial, because everybody's different. And I found for myself, I'm always still identifying new issues. It's so complex. When you've got a brain where the executive function is not efficient, it creates some potential strengths. It creates a lot of small, insidious problems. What's the most important thing in your life, in any relationship, is communication. And if you have great communication, if you can say anything to someone, it'd be a great relationship. And when the other person is tuning out, can't follow what you're saying, your child can't, follow the sentence if it has more than 9 words in it. They get lost and tune out, and the teacher doesn't know this, and the kid may be gifted and is in a gifted program, but is not able to sit there and focus perhaps like other kids. It's just insidious. So you want to know, and there's no destination. You're always peeling off another layer. It's very Zen-like in that sense. You're never quite there. You're always looking. And the other thing that keeps happening is they discover more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They started to identify some of the genes back in 1999 was, I think, when the first one was DRD4.7, the dopamine gene was identified as what they call a suspect gene because it was showing up frequently. And then there's been others, SHANK4 and SHANK, they all have different names. And I talked with one of the top researchers, Rosemary Tanick, about this, and she was so excited because they thought, okay, we cracked it. Then they realized, no, this shows up in a lot of different things, and every gene can be expressed numerous different ways and do numerous different things. And it's not really just about the gene. It's about how the gene gets expressed, and it's called epigenetics. Yes. And holy
what it pairs with and how it's...
Right. It's a whole nother area.
Yeah, and it's not simple. So the scientists are still trying to figure this out. And I don't doubt that the name will change. I think the name will probably change again because it isn't a deficit of attention.
That's what I think. I think we're going to have a name change.
Yeah, and it's one of many executive function disorders. Now, whether it will change, the people who do up, the doctors who are create the DSM, which is the sort of guideline for all the disorders and the description and the tests and the signs and so on, all of those, they tend to follow long behind what everybody is finally agreed on.
Right.
So they're not cutting edge. They're more, here's what we definitely know for sure.
Nice. I was curious about, you see the tragedy that happened in Detroit, Flint, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And is that lead poisoning related to ADHD at all? Do you know?
Lead poisoning can look like ADHD. So there's a lot of ways to damage your prefrontal cortex.
You can have
a mom who drinks, a mom who, or parents who smoked heavily, who did drugs a lot. You can have a fall down a staircase and have a head injury. You can be, have the genes and the propensity, as I did once I had the diagnosis, based on my son getting diagnosed. And I went, uh-oh. And then I looked at my, thought about my dad and my grandfather, and I went, oh, yeah. And then found out this is 80% of it is heritable, is from your parents. And so there's a lot of different causes. There are things that, and that's where it gets tricky. You know, at some point, if it is lead in the water, you really want to know so that we can fix the water in this town. But when it is genetic, the only way not to have it pass on is not to have kids. And what a shame if all these ADHD people were
You can't even go there.
No, and you know, there's interesting arguments about whether this is a, like, why has this survived in the gene pool?
Yeah.
And one of the more interesting ideas, and I think there may be some truth to it, but how they'll ever prove it, I don't know. But that there's a suggestion that we were the ones who, many years ago, guarded the door of the cave. Mm-hmm. We were the ones who were up, who were alert in the middle of the night, who couldn't sleep, who could hear things, who were hypersensitive, who took risks, who would charge at the bear, who would take care of everybody else, who would, who could make instant, fast decisions. You know, hunters and farmers, right? You know, and we were the hunters, we were the warriors, which, you know, explains what I think, why you see such a high rate in the military and in emergency responders and of all the fields, you name it.
I definitely can see some validity there. You know, I mean, just thinking about it, but I always tell people, you know, when they say, you really think it's genetic? I go, yeah. They're the most desirable partners. They're fun. They're creative. They're engaging. You want to be around them. You know, I mean, yes, relationships can, then there can be problems and maybe later down the road. But at first, especially, you know, the person's really locked onto you and they find you really fascinating, man, you're digging them hard. And that, I think people couple up, those ADD, non-ADHD people couple up because of that. And then they have babies, and then, and that's what's made it go on and on and on. Maybe what you're saying could be true, like back in caveman days, but I'm talking about like nowadays, why it's still, I said, those are the desirable people that people are hooking up with and having lots of kids with, and it's just going to keep going.
Well, if the corporate world wants to still survive and thrive, they need to find our gifts, just like we did in the hunting and gathering days.
That you dealt with the boring ones that sat around.
It drives me nuts. We all have to walk like Stepford Wives, and we're not.
Yeah.
So, you know, you find out, my manager I'm talking to, what our strengths are, and integrate a team that can, you know, bolster each other's strengths. And we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
No, and yet, when people find the right career, and I was one of the lucky ones who did, we saw, you know, and there's some very, very, very successful people with ADHD. Most will never talk about it, CEOs and stuff, because how are the shareholders going to deal with that one?
Exactly.
They're not going to be happy. And there's another reason why I think it's carried on in the gene pool. We have way higher rates of unplanned pregnancies because that takes planning to have a planned pregnancy, and we're not good at that.
Right.
So there's some alarming statistics about sexually active way, you know, not way, but earlier than our peers. That wasn't me, unfortunately. But not in a relationship. Not in a stable relationship. We divorce more often. We go through relationships. I know a lot of people with ADHD, they get to a certain point and they're cool with not marrying. The sad thing is, I know a lot of people with ADHD who decided I shouldn't have kids because I'm not reliable, and then got the diagnosis and went, oh, then started taking a medication that found one that worked for them, started putting in all these other things, meditation, getting coaching, changing careers perhaps, and so on, suddenly realizing, and that's that emotional tornado. Part of it is as things start to improve, it's hard not to look back and go, if only I had known. I went there and I can still go there now and then, but it's, that's a challenge that, you know, it's here in the gene pool because we keep passing it on. And I think you're absolutely right, Jenny, that, yeah, the people with ADHD, fun to be around. It gets wearing after a while. The jokes wear thin or the whatever can start to, and at that point, then there's the opportunity for both the person with ADHD and their partner, or if they both have it, for them to move beyond just that and find.
Yeah, to find that understanding, right, of one another and building it together. So now I'm dying to ask you, it's a nosy question, but can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with Ava, like how you guys met?
Well, she does what I tell her, and I order her around.
Nice, okay, cool.
I'm the boss.
And somehow I don't believe that.
She comes in kind of eyes downcast and a little Japanese geisha walk. It's So this is our second marriage, both of us. We met through work. She was an editor the editor on the Red Green Show, and I was one of the cast members and for performer and director and so on for many seasons. And then she worked on another series I did called History Bites. And when my first marriage ended, hers ended probably a year or two later, and we found each other. And I had a mad crush on her. And yeah, it was a really interesting, because I was also diagnosed around that time. So there was that going on, figuring that out. So it's been a roller coaster, and Gina Pera's wonderful book deals with some of that. Is it You, Me, or Adult ADD? It's a great book. And Gina's one of the experts who's all over our website in the videos, including the one that we have about relationships living with ADD. It's the relationships. It's interesting because we felt we can very easily and have fallen into the role where she's the responsible one. And in fact, here I am doing a podcast and she's upstairs doing the accounting and is not at all interested in doing the accounting, but knows it has to get done. At the same time, it's a spectrum, right? So it's not like I'm the only one who ever loses things. The flip side of it is, I think she would tell you that she loves the excitement, the warmth, all of those traits that we can have. I think she wearies sometimes of the roller coaster. We sold our house just as PBS started running ADD and Loving It. And the real estate agent had said, it's the end of the year. Nobody's going to want to get the house right away. You'll get a closing date for the spring or even later, and you'll be able to find somewhere to move to where you want to live. And we ended up, we had one offer, no conditions. We had to be out in 25 days. And I'm about to leave on this tour of PBS. The stress was incredible. We packed everything up into pods. We moved into this giant house that a friend had, and she ended up becoming it was her family's, her parents' home, and it was sitting empty. That was on the market, this giant place. And she ended up becoming our customer service person. So we lived there for 7 months, and then this house sold. We moved in with Ava's mom for a year.
Oh, my gosh.
In a small town, a small farming town. Three of us in a two-bedroom house with one bathroom. That was interesting. and then we moved to another town and got this beautiful four-story doctor's house where we were, again, renting for very little money, run and continue as we have all along, run the office out of the house. And then the owners of that house came back from Europe a year early. And so we had to move, and we're now renting a different house again with everything here, which is not good because there's days where... there have been days where I'm still in pajamas at 4 p.m. That's not
right.
And I'm not embarrassed by it. That's the worst.
Been there, done that. Neither am I.
Yeah.
So your marriage has stood the test of time.
So far, yeah. it's ongoing and it's always a layer. I mean, we had a thing just less than a week ago, stuff came up because Ava was helping me get to where we were going. We were going to see this wonderful play on Sunday afternoon, and we were driving through busy streets, city streets, streetcars going by and buses and all of it. And the GP, I knew where I was going because I grew up around this area. So I was fine, but she turned on the GPS because she wasn't sure. And then I was reading the GPS as the GPS was talking. Traffic was heavy. By the time we got to the theater, I was stressed because I hadn't spoken it. I hadn't said, I'm good. It's okay. So when I did finally say it, she knew something was wrong, and it was what? And I told her, and she was so upset with herself because she knew that mm-hmm. telling me how to drive when I'm driving is just like having someone tapping you on the shoulder as you're writing an exam and going, make sure you get the right answers.
Right.
It's like, this isn't helping, right? I'm busy. So anyway, so there's really interesting that stuff like that can still come up, and it's still mm-hmm. something to take it apart and see what it is. And what gets us out of it, although sometimes we can't hear it, is the one who's not upset will say, I'm on your team. I'm on your side. That's the reminder that, oh, okay, got it. Right. And sometimes, and I actually said it, but I think it was too soon. And she just couldn't hear it. Just, I know, but, and because she was, and what it was a little to do with me. It was really, she was upset with herself. And so often I think when I'm upset with her, as I was in the car, what I was upset about was, I'm struggling with my ADHD. I hate struggling with my ADHD.
Exactly.
But it's still a problem. Exactly. I hate that I'm mad, and there's still stuff up for me to figure out about having this ADHD and being frustrated, and rather than just letting it go.
Jenny had so much patience. We were going back and forth because we're doing a couple things. When are we talking? Are we having blab this day, Zoom this day? Well, you know, I wrote it down, but I still messed it up. And I was so angry with myself. It's like, really? You can't even get this right? You got to call Jenny back again and get it straight? Yeah. And I still do that. I get frustrated with my limitations.
And I know that. You know, that's the thing. I know she's frustrated. So mm-hmm. I feel like I need to just give her space because I know it's sort of an unspoken thing. But when she sorts it out, she's back, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I think, you know, this leads into an interesting point, which is a lot of the stuff around a relationship, dealing with a relationship, I think, and making it work with ADHD, so much of it is logistical stuff. It is not deep emotional. Does he love me or does she love me? He doesn't seem to love me anymore. It's like, no, that initial rush that you talked about, Jenny, that focus has faded a bit. And now it's scuba diving or quilting or whatever the new focus is.
Yeah.
So, but it is logistics. It is, it is simple things. Like if I'm talking too much, we now have a signal. So if we're at a party and I'm yakking, Ava just catches my eye and just tugs on her ear like Carol Burnett used to do. Just a little tug. Just a little and a little smile, but there's this moment of, right, thank you. And then I wrap up my sentence and I go, anyway, what have you been up to? And then switch to the mode of asking questions. And then when someone gives an answer, not topping their answer with my own story. And so I may get that pull on the ear a couple of times, but it's given with love.
Mm-hmm.
But there's points where you can't hear that. Now, because I've given her permission and we've actually taken the time to create this, it's a really great structure for us. And it's those simple things and understanding your own ADHD, understanding the times of day when you do need to get some protein because you're starting to fade. It's, you know, ADHD people often say, you know, I want my spouse to really understand me. And that's a two-way street. You got to be willing to understand what it's like to live with you and what it's like for them when they can stay on track and you're going all over the place, unable to finish a sentence. How hard is that to follow for somebody else?
Yeah.
And so I know, I think early days, especially, people are very wanting to share what's going on. And we actually have a video on that as well about who to tell about disclosing, because it's mm-hmm. it is really risky for you, for your career, for your family, for your kids. They're disclosing theirs. Who do you tell and who should never know and so on? But you want to, I wanted to tell everybody. And I think that's a really, I was keen for the world to know so everybody could adjust to my schedule, metabolism or whatever.
Well, I didn't want people to think badly of me, you know, like I forgot something. And the weird thing about that is I would be certain that I was right, like more than certain. I never put a caveat that I might not be right about this. No, I know that's true. Well, it wasn't. But I wasn't lying. I really thought it was true because I forgot what the truth was, you know? And that concerned me.
And then we're also feeling, it's not just attention that we're having trouble regulating. Right? It's emotions, right. It's right. Physical sensitivities. And again, we have a video on that about overly emotional sensitivity. And that there's made a video on anger that's kind of a whole separate video. It is a whole separate video because that's a relationship killer. That's a career killer.
I was going to ask you, the emotional aspects. You know, people don't talk a lot. I can't say that. A lot of people talk about it, but... Yeah. It still needs to be talked about more because people lose the objectivity when they are emotional and so don't realize that they're dealing with some ADHD stuff. It becomes, it's my feelings. And it, for some reason that connection hasn't been made for everybody. They think of organizing, planning, prioritizing. That's ADHD. And then their emotions, well, that's my personality and they don't realize it's all interconnected.
Right. And you know, it's easy to go, well, you'd be easily upset or depressed or suffering from anxiety if you had ADHD. It's like, it's a problem with dealing with the emotions and it's monitoring them. And so I've done a lot of personal development courses. And one of the things I've really come away with is that everything I think is reality is a story that I've created to explain. So, I was in a course. It was a very powerful course. And at one point, the course leader, woman leading, it was brilliant. She said, who here, raise your hand if you have a complaint about someone you love or someone in your life. Who has a complaint about someone? I think she might have said someone you love. I don't know. Anyway, every hand in the room goes up, right? Except for the few people who are, I'm not participating in this. This is weird stuff. And
mother made me come.
Yeah. And then she said, who's had the complaint for more than a year, 2 years, 5 years? And she just kept going. She got up to 30 years. And I was one of the 7 or 8 people who still had their hand up. And she said, you've got complaints that are older than some of the people in this course. And who wants to work with me? And I waved my arm. Okay, Rick, what's the complaint? My mom doesn't trust me. My mom is a worrier and a nag. And I talked to Rich. She went, can you get specific for me just to show me? And I'm unknowingly and unwittingly sticking my foot farther and farther down my throat here. And I said, well, like if we're at the cottage, every time we go on the boat, even if it's 4 times a day, every time we're going down the marina, we're doing it. Make sure you have bailing cans, make sure you have paddles, make sure you have life jackets every time. And I said, and the boat holds 4 comfortably, and that's all we ever have in it. There's 12 life jackets in there. Nobody has kids anymore, and there's 3 children's life jackets. There's 9, I don't know how many buckets and stuff. Anyway, and laugh. And I said, and you know what? My mom doesn't even know how to drive the boat, and she's telling us it. And I go on and on and on. And the course leader's listening so intently and just nodding sympathetically. And she moves across the room and she's standing about 2 or 3 feet away from me. And she looks me in the eye and says, why do you think she says that? And I burst into tears because she loves me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what an idiot. She loves me. And you know what? She can't drive the boat. She doesn't know how to drive the boat. And if anything happened to us, it would kill her. And I'm standing here and she asked, do you want to keep going? I said, yeah, bring it on. And we talked about it. So I went forward and with it. And eventually suddenly this penny dropped. Or she said, what's it been like for you living with this belief? I said, I've stopped going to cottage. I stopped taking the kids to cottage because I found it so frustrating that she did. And of course she trusts me. And And they said, what's been the impact on your kids? They have one grandparent left and they don't get to see her very much. Wow, that's a big impact of my belief. And here's the other, here's the belief I could come up with. My mom loves me. She loves me more than anything. She loves us more than anything. And she will do anything to make sure we're okay. And she does the one thing she can do, which is remind us that about this. And the joke, of course, is at this point, I have kids of my own and I'm not seeing the, still not seeing the connection. And then she said to me, what's it been like for your mom having a son who believed this about her? And I was gone. I was just crying. And then I suddenly stopped and I went, I just got it. I get who doesn't trust me. It's me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was diagnosed at that point. I knew what was going on. And I had a sense of, now I had some a better explanation of why I couldn't trust myself sometimes or often. And at that moment for me, that was a life-changing moment because I suddenly got, it's all a story. And I remember years afterward, a friend who'd done the course and had become one of the people leading some of the courses, she said to me, I said, it's all that you could describe it in two words, which is interpret powerfully.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you said, Agnes, we're going to make up a story. We're going to have these memories and so on. And you get to find a better explanation. So mm-hmm. We're driving in the car. Is it because Ava doesn't love me that she's got GPS going? Or is it because Ava knows I'll be upset if we're late because I'm really looking forward to the play and she wants to help? And you know, sometimes I'm not the world's greatest driver and it's busy traffic and it's hectic and on and on and on. And she's on my side and I forget. And then I tell her, you know, that this thing, and I'm sure I had an edge to my voice. I didn't yell or anything, but I just said, it doesn't help. And then she forgot I'm on her side. And so it's always when I'm stuck now, I get that there's an alternative or a better explanation. So if somebody will post something on our website or a comment saying ADHD isn't real, they're just drugging kids, that used to infuriate me. Mm-hmm. And now I go, you know what? If I knew as little as that person knows, and at one point I did know that little about it, I didn't know anything, I'd be worried that they're drugging kids. Big pharma doesn't necessarily have the world's best reputation. And some of that's rightly earned and so on. So I get it. And my sister, people will say, my sister sends me these things saying ADHD isn't real and that I shouldn't be drugging my kids. And it's because in some ways your sister thinks she knows better because you messed up in the past. Another reason is because your sister is worried about your child and your sister, you know. And I get it. I mean, there's people who aren't vaccinating their children because that's the right thing to do. They have no idea that if their child gets measles, it wakes up their immune system for 2 years. It has to rebuild your immune. The danger from measles is huge, and it leads to all kinds of, like, a much higher death rate amongst kids. These things, don't get me started, right?
Yeah. You know, the best thing that I say to myself to calm myself down, I used to be furious too. And I used to try to change their mind, which would end up in an argument because I was furious. So one day I just said, they're never going to change, especially my sisters. And they're just old school and they'll never change. So I just said, they just don't know. They just don't know.
Well, we're going through our entire shop. We have a video called Facing the World. And I talk about the idea that you can't argue with people. In fact, study after study has shown the more voraciously or vociferously you argue, the more you push the person to defend themselves. And if you want evidence of that, take a look at the American political system at the current moment. People are more and more entrenched behind candidates who nobody's perfect, and some are really, really imperfect. And people, because they're attacked, have to defend. And there's another whole thing that's called cognitive dissonance, and it's a really interesting thing, and we all do it, and we have no idea we are doing it. So what I suggest in this is you can't argue. What you do is you just ask questions.
Right.
And you ask the question. So I wrote a blog about this, and in the video I talk about this. What I say to people is, when they go, I don't believe in ADHD. And I go, well, what about DRD 4.7? And they just look at me, what was that? Well, that was the first gene that was identified back 16 years ago now. Some of the blood work was actually done at the Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto. And they just, yeah, that was the first genes. And now, of course, with the brain scan. So how do you explain all of that and the 4,000 studies that have been done? Now, I don't usually don't keep because I don't, but I wrote a blog about this suggesting people try it. And literally 3 days after, in the comment section of the blog on the website, somebody wrote, OMG, oh my God. I think they wrote OMG. Anyway, said, oh my God, I read this. And 2 days last night, I was out with friends and somebody announced they didn't believe in ADHD. And I asked, what about DRD 4.7? He said, what's that? I said, that was the first gene that was ever identified linked to ADHD. And he said, I stand corrected.
No kidding.
I stand correct. I want you to think about that.
Wow.
Think about when was the last time you heard a politician, the head of a company, a newscaster, especially a talk radio person, anybody ever say, I stand corrected. And if nobody's willing to stand corrected, nothing changes.
Yeah.
Because if there's two choices, you're bound to be on average, at best, right, 50%, you know, 50% minimum just by getting. I'll always pick A. You're bound to be right 50% of the time, but nobody knows everything. Anyway, it gets into a whole other thing, but of us getting stuck and people with ADHD getting stuck on things and getting defensive and mm-hmm. so on, especially if we feel under threat. You know, and then the overwhelm starts, as it did in the car with my wife and I.
Right.
And I got to the point where I'm not explaining myself.
No.
I'm not explaining myself.
Well, I decided that I had to make a value judgment. Is it worth my time? How much time will I invest in trying to make this point that I'm trying to make? But I think you've really, I'm going to try that next time. I'm just going to ask the question, because when you ask a question, no matter what the question is, it puts the person back in the, you're in the driver's seat then. Instead of having to defend something, now they are on the, oh, I have to defend themselves. And
yeah, and you may not even think, and I think you tune it down by not thinking of them as having to defend themselves. I think what you have to do, and it's hard, is shift to, this person doesn't know yet and I've got to be gracious or they will never change them, because there's people standing around now all looking at them. And so, and then the other thing I will say is, and I go through all of this in the video, but I will say is, you know what, I don't believe in ADHD. First thing I'll say is, you know what? That's exactly what I thought.
Oh, I read your blog about that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Because guess what? That was at some point exactly what I thought. There are groups out there who have been attacking psychiatry and for decades, and the damage has been done, and it is taking forever to undo it. And we're hoping to be part of that. I know we're part of that in from the response we're getting from people who have people have done that I think is so valuable is show people the video. ADD and Loving It is so powerful for people. Again and again, we get letters from coaches even saying, I showed at a couple, husband didn't believe, I showed him 8 minutes of your video. He went, okay, so what do we do about this? He got it in 8 minutes. And the video, I mean, not just for people with ADHD and suddenly recognizing, but I've heard from people who, one woman wrote, I said, I got a call from this morning from my parents, and her parents had dismissed the possibility of ADHD for, I think, 8 years or something like that, and snorted at it and sneered at it and so on. She said, and it was my dad, and he said, your mom wants to tell you something. And he phoned the mom, as dads do, your mom says it. And mom said, honey, I'm so sorry, we get it. And she said, I didn't understand. They saw some program you made. I haven't seen it yet, but I am living in a world I cannot imagine. And the reason the video works is because it is a story. It is the story of this couple and him getting diagnosed and getting officially diagnosed and starting to reframe his life, both of them. And then it's one thing to say someone's unreliable. What do you do about that? If you say someone's got problems with executive function in certain areas, okay, that we can work with, that I can deal with. Someone has trouble listening, great. We're not going to sports bars when we want to have a conversation with my kids. Yeah. When they're here, we eat in, we bring the food here, or we go somewhere quiet. Or if we've seen the kids a lot, then we'll go to a crazy place because, you know, then we have lots to talk about and the noise and whatever. That brings it back to the logistics, the little things you do. Instead of saying, can you take out the garbage, Rick? It's Rick, got my attention? Rick, can you take out the garbage? Even better, Rick, the garbage is piled up and it's quite high. Wow, that creates an image, right? You create an image for me.
Right.
You're creating that urgency.
Yeah, and creating an image where, you know, people, just a list of stuff. If I say to you, you know, there was a car accident. If I say this red convertible rolled over and slid down a hill and it's stuck at the bottom with a tree right through the windshield, you got an image, right?
Right.
So whether you have ended up saying later on they were late for an accident, you know, it's a much more memorable thing. And it's one of the memory tricks that people with ADHD have used. In fact, it's how memory experts often remember things. So we've talked about things like when you put your keys down in a place, you create a mental image. And so what works for me, and Dave Farrell, the world's Guinness Book of Record memory guy, who came to the house here and actually did a couple of webinars with us, but he taught me this and taught everybody who was watching. What he would do is put the phone down and then you create an image. And so what I would create is the image of my phone. If it blew up, it would blow the corner off of, right now, my phone's right here, it would blow the corner off of this desk. So I have this image of splintered wood, burnt, and now when I come, where's my phone? I've got this powerful image. Other people would create, somebody might create more of a romantic image or a fantasy image or something else, but you use visual. We're visual learners. Humans are visual. We were seeing and surviving just long before we had language to put it and help us figure that out. And if I say, you know, if I say pink elephant, or if I say dancing gorilla, you don't see the words dancing. You might eventually see the words. What you see is this, and you see your own particular version of dancing gorilla, right? And it might have a smile on its face and be very cartoony, or it might be scary and whatever. But it works for you because that's the ultimate.
Right, right.
And if worst comes to worst, you take a picture of it with your iPhone.
Yes, exactly.
So wait, so you go over all of this in the video, Living with Adult ADD.
We go over some of these things in that video, and then there are other videos that what we tried to do to not make it overwhelming, but we really tried to address the main topics. So there's a video on sleep. There's a video on finding the right career for ADHD, and it's not one specific. It's a really an interesting way to search and start how to view what you're looking for. There's one on getting your degree and going to college and all of the accommodations and so on. There's another that's just coming out in the next few weeks about kids and school. And so there's all these different topics, even about marijuana, which is incredibly popular. And we've gotten all this flack from people who are accusing us to be pawns of drug companies. And I think, I wish we were, because then we'd have a lot of money. But it's very interesting because the one thing, marijuana and cannabis can do some amazing things. The one thing it doesn't help with is focus and memory. It does help with anxiety, and it's easier to focus when you're not anxious. So the people who use it will swear up and down that they focus better. It's like, they're less.
I have cousins that do. Yeah, I got cousins that's the big debate. I'm like, no, I know what you think.
It feels like, here's the answer. Yeah. And then, as I said, we did this epic thing on medication. I wanted to do one video that would be sort of, here's medication. This is all we're going to say about it. And it's everything. And I've forgotten the price on it, but it's amazing because four and a half hours of video, and it's everything, you know, side effects. And one of the big things that it gets into too is the risk of not taking medication.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go buy all these videos for sure. I tell people, I sometimes take your posts and put them on Twitter or put them on my Facebook because you are entertaining, but there's a message there that I want people to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
That transcends like the, what you're watching, you know?
Absolutely. So, you know, you could get out there and you could stand up and say, Shakespeare could walk out on stage and say, folks, it's better to take action than to delay and put things off and try and get too much information and be sure. At some point, you just have to trust and go for it. And everybody leave the theater going, that's good advice. You should put that into a fridge magnet. And they won't do anything about it. So instead, he writes Hamlet. And by the end of the play, after most of the characters have been killed, because of his delay, because of his inability to make a decision, because of all of the things, you're on the edge of your seat screaming, do something. And and now she's killed herself, you know, Ophelia's killed herself. And you're, so that's the power of story. That's the power of myth. And, you know, that's why I think in the medication video, what makes it, I was interested because I sent the medication video to a bunch of doctors after it was all put together and said, can you give us any feedback? And they were telling us this, it's now 70%, not 80%. So we made changes based on all of this input. But the one comment unsolicited we got was, I love hearing from all these experts, but it is the people sharing their stories that makes it so powerful. So to have a doctor say, some people have an issue with thirst, and then have three people going, yeah, I found I still need to drink a lot of water. Well, you can see I've got my bottle with me here. Somebody said at one point, I hardly talk, my mouth would get so dry. And then two more people going, no, that was never a problem for me. I'd never had the dry mouth. I did have a problem with, and so on. So you...
Right, you're really listening to people's individual stories.
Yeah, and it's such a range. The one thing I do think that's going to... these things are already blending together. OCD, autism spectrum stuff is, I'm sure I've got I have a degree in physics. I bet I could score, not high, but I bet I would be, you know, slightly in that field of high functioning Asperger's or whatever. There's some traits. My son's an engineer. And then, you know, anxiety and all of these things that overlap executive function disorders. And they, you know, it's very easy to fall into depression when you've got a mind that gets stuck in loops. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Goes back and forth. Or anxiety, same thing.
Rick, is there any one thing that you learned that you never knew before about medication when you did this project?
Oh, boy, there were a ton of things. Although I'd put it this way, because we were drawing from all the interviews we'd done. So in doing those interviews, every time we interviewed a doctor, they would say something that would be a surprise to me. And, you know, that these medications, great for ADHD, but if you have undiagnosed bipolar and it's not ADHD, this is going to be a problem. You know, and so there were things like that every time we interviewed someone, and I don't consider myself an expert, but I asked this opportunity. Here's the thing. We've done this video and we've interviewed 9 really great doctors, top experts, some of them. And I get to ask all the questions I want to ask.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know. And over the years, we just kept, every time we were at a conference anywhere, or someone was nearby at a conference and we drove out and interviewed them, I got to ask every question I could think of. And then when I give talks and I have a one-man show and I've done talks at schools and colleges and you name it. And of course, afterwards, there'll be a question answer session. So I've heard all of the questions and many of them are mine and some are ones I would never have considered because I'm not dealing with some of the other issues that other people are, that they're on heart medication or they're on who knows, you know, or there's bipolar in the family or they're these other things. So, or simply that they've tried, you know, they tried a stimulant and it didn't work or they tried the non-stimulant and it didn't work and they're convinced that nothing will ever work for them.
Right. Wow.
So, yeah, it's very interesting to hear people who've been, you hear their stories and then we ask them any advice and they say, and the people who went, some of them took 2 years to figure out what was going to work for them. And they said, don't give up, keep trying, just switch, play with it, play with the, and you know, we've explained in the video, explains how you want to figure it out. Approaching
because the alternative isn't better. Not taking medicine isn't better.
Well, if I told you that if there was a medication that increased your child's or your someone in your family 700% increase, no, 100% increase would be double. So 600 was, say it this way, 7 times the rate of having car accidents, multiple car accidents where they're at fault. What would you say? You would say, I am never getting my child near this medication. Well, here's the thing. That's the rate for undiagnosed ADHD. Wow. 7 times the rate of multiple car accidents where your child is at fault. Still don't want to know if you still don't want your child labeled?
This is a true story. The one year I was having a very nerve-wracking year, so to say, so I had high anxiety. I got in 5 car accidents that year.
Yep.
And they were all my fault.
Yep. My son got his driver's license 2 months, and he's a cautious guy. 2 months later, he hit a parked car in a parking lot. It's, you want to know, double, triple the rate of divorce, STDs. We get far higher rates of getting tested because of impulsivity, unplanned pregnancies, you know, ending up adopted, fired, bankrupt, hospital visits higher, not 2 to 4 times. I think hospital visits 50% more, double the cost of the healthcare system, according to one study. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And then, you know, you add the mood swings and the confusion of not knowing, and you've got impulsivity, higher rate of suicide. That's just, it's bound to happen. And so the reason my comedy career has been put on hold probably forever, but I don't know, and I'm doing this is because we have saved lives. We have saved marriages. We have saved careers. And among adults with ADHD, the best estimate I keep hearing is that 80 to 85% of people who fall into the spectrum, I hate saying that we have it, but we're struggling with these issues, mm-hmm. Who are, you know, really do have trouble with this. 80% of adults don't know yet. Mm-hmm. And so that's brutal. That is a lot of unnecessary suffering. And I don't know how you put a price on a child lost or in a car accident. And I know people, well, the top researcher, arguably the top researcher in the past 30 years on ADHD is Dr. Russell Barkley, and his brother was ADHD, was killed in a car accident. I have a friend who is a course leader, personal development course leader, and did a variety of different things. And son was killed in 16 or 17, killed in a car accident. And when he saw ADD and loving it, he said, "Oh my God, this is me." And I didn't say anything, but I thought, yeah. And you passed it on. You saw the testimonials on his Facebook page. Everybody said he was like his dad. It's like, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those kids aren't coming back. And you know, we were talking here about relationships, and we've got the video on special price. I forgot what it is now, but it's even lower than the already low price. But that video really deals with living with ADHD, really deals with, first of all, there is hope, which is so crucial. Like, it's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, well, okay, he's got ADHD, that explains it, we're good. It's an ongoing thing. And the hardest part, and I don't know if I've said this already, I keep leading up to it and wandering off, but is that it takes as much and maybe more for the person who does not have ADHD to adjust. They have to, because it's so easy. In the video, you know, there's a conversation about this, about just, well, I got ADHD. And the partner who hasn't is so angry, so frustrated. And it's like, oh, they just got to get out of jail card. That's it. They got a free pass. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be, oh, okay. It's dopamine, did you say? And norepinephrine. Okay, good to know. And I should stop being angry and let go of all. No, you can still have all that stuff. So there, it takes something. But what I like about the video is that it gives you it gives you the sort of range of how this is going to affect both of you and the potential, how you can move forward from here. Because the saddest thing is to hear people say, we still loved each other, but
we
broke up. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the reasons that helps fuel my work.
Yeah.
Because my dad did commit suicide.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. After he and my mom had been married for 27 years, and he was not diagnosed with ADHD, but 100% guarantee he had ADHD because my sister and her kids and cousins and all this that we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, but back then we didn't know, but he was diagnosed with bipolar. He went off the medication, and within 2 years, I mean, he divorced my mom. And she was very, very, very bitter and very resentful of things. Like, a video like what you're describing right now would have possibly saved a marriage and then also saved a life. That's the big impact. It's like real lives, really.
Because especially my generation was taught, if you work hard enough, you can get it. Not so much. And then when you start failing time after time again, and, you know, we work twice as hard as the neurotypical person, and you're still not getting it, and you're still not, like, you know, I did pretty well in the IT spectrum, but I was so sad and anxious that I wasn't reaching my potential.
That's the other thing, that term, there's a term for underemployed. And I think most ADHD people, one of the things I will say to people if they're asking, what are the symptoms? I'll say a constant sense that you're capable of more, that you're underachieving, and if you just try a little harder. Mm-hmm. That's all it says on your report cards, needs to try harder.
Yeah.
And it's only when you get the diagnosis and you realize that for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it is, you've been trying as freaking hard as you can. This is it. Because you're missing something. You're low.
Like, I had times of such success in my life.
It's sure.
Like, well, if I did that, I could do this.
Yep.
Well, that's the confounding thing about it. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Well, I could definitely talk to Rick and Agnes all day.
Me too.
But I think we're going to wrap it up this for now. But I want to urge everyone to go get this video. You go on to totallyadd.com, Living with Adult ADD.
There's a shop you go to. It's a little separate website. The Totally ADD, click on the button that says shop. It's on the left side.
Oh, I see. Totally yep. ADD shop.
Yeah, and you go there, and then if you look under videos, it'll be in there among the videos. And if you subscribe to the newsletter, you'll be able to see there's always at least two things on sale at any one time, if that's an issue for people. And if not, if you're in a hurry, there is a range of stuff. There's ebooks, there's audios, there's a lot of videos. And what I like is I'm a comedian. I have no medical degree, but the doctors that we talk to, the experts, the coaches, the authors, the clinicians and researchers, people on every, so you're not getting one person's opinion. And what I love the most, and this is again the joy of making this, is I got to spend 2-3 hours with Dr. Ned Halliwell, I got to spend time with Dr. Russell Barkley, with Gina Perra, with all of the names. You know, I got to sit and talk with these people. You know, I don't know what it was. I don't think you would. Dr. Barkley doesn't necessarily deal with the general public anyway. So to be able to get all these great doctors from all across the world and from and a range of beliefs, you know, which is interesting too. Those who, some also specialize in OCD and in other executive function disorders. So there, you know, you'll be able to hear from this vast spectrum. And I don't know what does it add up to? Probably 40 or 50,000 clients they've seen over the years. There's a ton of experience that you're drawing.
Yeah, that's, I love telling when people go, well, we don't know a lot. I'm like, but we actually do.
Yeah.
We actually know a lot.
We
know a really whole lot. And I'm just going to direct everyone to your website now. Next time I'll say, oh yeah, why don't you go check out that library there? And you tell me,
what's the name of that team?
Well, and what I love is when somebody buys a couple of people, like sometimes you'll see someone has bought 4 copies of something. And you know it's a teacher or a parent, somebody in a family with, and they just hand out the video to family members. So they keep it handy. So the next time they're at a PTA meeting or they're wherever they are and somebody, that's just the drug guy. It's like, watch this and tell me what you think. I'm really curious. And it, I wouldn't say it shuts people up. It actually turns people around and they go.
I think it just educates. It's wonderful. And I can see why you were inducted into the, Hall of Fame there. What's it called again? It's the Order of Ontario.
It's like the Knights of the Round Table, except there's no swords. No, it's.
So what did you get? Did you get like
a sword?
I actually saw you. I saw the video. I saw you get the ribbon.
Yeah.
And the medal.
A ribbon and this lovely medal. It's the province of Ontario's highest order. So that's where I was born and raised. And it's goes to people who have done something above and beyond, basically. So in the same year, when I got mine, there was a doctor, Canadian doctor, who had made a huge difference in stopping Ebola from spreading in East Africa.
Okay.
West Africa, I guess it was. There were a woman who basically created the palliative care system in the province of Ontario, another woman who developed palliative care for people who are deaf or hard of hearing, medical researchers, and you name
it.
All of these people who are doing these amazing things on top of their regular jobs. And for me, it's funny because this has become my regular.
Right.
Because, as you'll see when you get to the website, there is so much there.
Right.
And it's overwhelming. That's the other thing I tell the people, I say to people, just start with one or two things. Think about them, especially if you're ordering them, watch them with someone and have the remote in your hand. especially the second time you go through it. Watch it once through, but the second time, keep stopping it to talk about it. Did you know that? I didn't know that either.
I love it. Well, I think you're saving just as many lives as those doctors and researchers.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I commend you for that.
You know, so now I'm just going to thank you both for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day.
Bye. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
That's it for the show, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. And whether you have ADHD yourself, or live with or love someone who does, or both. Remember, we're all in this together, and everybody benefits when we begin to see through the other's eyes.